What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacy Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Nick Reiner, now represented by a public defender after high-profile attorney Alan Jackson withdrew from the case, citing disagreements with his client. We're going to get into all of this. Sources say Nick now admits to killing his parents, but believes his incarceration is part of a conspiracy against him. That's the narrative that's coming out of Nickland. His medication for schizoaffective disorder was reportedly changed about a month before the murders after he complained about weight gain. New TMZ documentary laying out that under California law, the insanity defense doesn't require proving he didn't know right from wrong, only that he didn't understand the nature and quality of his actions. We're going to dive into all of this right now, specifically that angle, the angle of the defense of Nick Reiner, where it goes from here. Bob Mata, defense attorney, is with us, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Let's start with your reaction to Alan Jackson walking away from this case after just a few weeks, citing disagreements or citing issues with his client beyond his control, beyond the control of Nick Reiner. 10 outstanding subpoenas when he left. From a defense perspective, what does this withdrawal tell you about what's happening behind the scenes in the defense of Nick Reiner?
This cash, lack thereof. Yeah. You know, that's the one thing that Nick could not control. Because obviously they have the Slayer statute out there, but we know that Nick was living in his dad's pool house or whatever the fuck coach yeah. out. Like Nick was not making any money, unlike the other Reiner children, who I think were self-sufficient, that, you know, aside from their family's wealth, I think that they did their own shit, made mm-hmm. their own money. Nick wasn't that guy for various reasons. So, you know, without getting into the concept, would Nick have been able to dip into, you know, his father's wealth and the family wealth? No, he wouldn't have been able to. That would have had to go through probate. The other part of it is that Nick didn't have any money. We know that he's indigent because mm-hmm. he was appointed a public defender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You only get appointed a public defender if you're found indigent by the court. So mm-hmm. we know that exists in the world because he was found indigent and he was appointed the public defender. So yeah.
What is the standard for that, Bob?
For each state, it's a little bit different. But typically it's going to revolve around the judge asking some, like I would call them baseline financial questions. You know, are you employed? You know, do you own property? Do you own a vehicle? Do you have anything that you could sell in order to raise funds? Mm-hmm. You know, like, what do you have in the bank? So they'll do like a baseline of what your finances look like. Is it an audit? No. You know what I'm saying? So like, yeah. You're basically, it's kind of a trust me, bro type situation where, you mm-hmm. know, the guy's like, yeah, I've got a job, but I'm minimum wage. And, you know, what I'm making barely pays my rent type shit. So that's kind of what that evaluation looks like for the most part in terms of whether or not somebody's indigent and requires the public defender to be appointed.
This is just going to be pure speculation, but you'll have a better idea on it than I would. Was it a trust me, bro type situation that Alan Jackson even got involved in this thing in the first place? You know, like basically, okay, there is a big potential for money here. If he has access to his parents' cash, I'm going to guess he probably didn't really know for sure at that moment in time. But if there's a trust me, bro, I got access to the dough going on, you might bring Alan Jackson in. You know, was it that sort of a situation or was it a situation where, you know, the family was initially on board for having him defend their brother? And then they thought, you know, let's let him fight this on his own. What do you think was going on behind the scenes there where Alan Jackson got involved enough to be doing, you know, putting his staff on this, doing research, everything that goes into preparing for this for all those weeks and the manpower, and then suddenly we're out? Was it, what do you think happened?
So I'm going to echo your sentiment that this is complete speculation, obviously, yeah. But the way things typically go down in kind of a rush job situation when you have a family member that's getting arrested is Nick may have gotten a call in terms of being able to call somebody, and I'm sure he called somebody in his family. I don't think Nick is the one on the phone saying, okay, I'm going to call Workman Jackson, whatever, mm-hmm. and get Alan Jackson on the phone. I think he probably called one of his siblings and is like, oh, they just arrested me on dad's murder. Can you help and get me a lawyer? And then the family, this is, again, speculation. Yeah. Family is the one that makes the calls because that's typically how it works. Mm-hmm. In our experience, Allison and I, when we're, you know, engaged, it's typically somebody who's in custody and somebody's out on the outside making the calls to various attorneys. They're shopping for lawyers. And typically, you know, that money conversation takes place early on. You know, mm-hmm. like we'll give them an idea. They'll say, okay, well, what does it sound like they're being arrested for? And they're saying, okay, it's a high felony of some kind. And we'll say, okay, well, the way that we do it, we charge X up front for a pretrial retainer. And then if it goes to trial, we're coming back and we're going to ask for more money. We choose to split it up as opposed to getting a lump sum all on the front end, which we think is more fair to the client. So I'm guessing, and you know, I mean, love him or hate him, I know you're no Alan Jackson fan, but the fact
he's a great attorney, but yeah,
he's a fucking great lawyer. I mean, the guy does the job, period.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And in terms of being in LA, and if you're arrested in a high profile case in LA, he is the guy you hire. Mm-hmm. And with that comes a fucking massive retainer fee.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately, I think initially that the family's like, all right. And Jackson probably said, with thinking exactly what you said, he's like, there's a deep pocket here. I'm not necessarily worried on the front end. It's the Reiner family that are fucking Hollywood royalty. I'm going to get paid on this thing somehow. And so he jumps right in. Like, he bites on it immediately when he mm-hmm. gets the call from one of the mm-hmm. sibs. And he's like, all right, you know, we're all in. And the conversation probably takes place on the front end with the sibs. And then as he starts interacting with Nick, it probably changes. Because remember, even if the family is who puts up the money, it's ultimately the client, the defendant, is the one that signs the agreement. The defendant is the one that has retained the attorney, not the family. They're just providing the money. It's an important distinction to understand. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, Nick has to be in agreement. If they called and said, all right, Alan, we're going to send you into court. He's going to be in court tomorrow. So we need somebody. Because you have to know that turnaround. Remember, even though Nick was in no condition to bring into court, and they ended up kicking that first date, the next date was the next day. Like, mm-hmm. so right after the arrest, they were getting him in there. So I think ultimately what happened is that, like you said, I think the family thought better of it.
Yeah.
I think they were like, you know what? Like, we've had 2 weeks, 3 weeks to think about this, and fuck that guy. Like that. That's like, I'm not like they, I'm sure they debated it. I'm sure they argued behind the scenes. They're all just destroyed emotionally. They're going mm-hmm. through everything right now. And the last thing that you're going to want to be dealing with when you're trying to deal with this kind of loss, this incredible, just out of the blue, nightmarish type of loss is do we want to fucking put up the money to defend our brother who did something in our estimation is indefensible?
I don't know, and I sleep at night with that.
And do you think that this decision changed? I mean, again, all pure speculation here. If we're assuming that early on the family said, yeah, we want to get the best, it's almost muscle memory, because this is how life works when you're the Reiners. Yes. You're going to get the best of things because you can afford the best of things. Yeah. And when it comes to criminal defense, your first thought in this moment before you have a chance to really kind of parse it out and go, oh, this Nick has a pattern of destroying our lives, maybe we should stop funding it. You're initial reaction is going to be, let's get the best attorney. I'm wondering if there was a moment in there where with the direction of where they wanted to go, and we all know the direction of where this was going to go, because Alan Jackson made the statement out on the steps that under California law, Nick Reiner is not guilty of the murder of his parents. Print that. That whole spiel. I'm wondering if the family, you know, they got wind of that. They had the conversation with the attorney, too, and they're like, okay, we're going to go in this direction. They're like, no, fuck that. Like, it may be true, and there may be elements to where he may have been, you know, psychotic at that moment in time.
Yeah.
But they know the back history. They know the front load of this, the first 17 years of utter hell and poor decision-making on the part of Nick that led to this. Yeah. And then they said, yeah, we don't like this direction you're going to take it. It's really the only direction Alan Jackson could competently take it as an attorney. And I wonder if they just said, yeah, no thanks. You're right, but no.
Yeah, no, I think that's highly likely. You know, I think that is a very likely scenario as to exactly what happened. And again, the reason that I brought up the point that where the siblings may have been the money people, the fact of the matter is that does not allow them to become privy to the conversations that take place between Jackson and Nick. If he's even able to have conversations with Nick, which is something I know we're going to get into in terms of the competency issue that seems to have arisen, you know, but ultimately at the end of the day, like that attorney-client privilege thing is a real thing.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that Jackson would have been sharing potential legal theories and defenses with the family, but I also think that they're smart enough to figure it out on their own, that by reading through the tea leaves of the shit that Jackson was saying publicly, where the Reiner kids are like, all right, well, it's fucking clear this dude's going with an insanity defense. Yeah. I don't need to hear it from him. We heard it with our own ears because he decided to go out and make public statements and blast it out to the world, which Jackson is prone to do. You know, that's what he does in his cases. So ultimately, I think that the family probably is doing, and again, we're speculating. We don't know anything. We don't have to, but there was that conversation like, fuck that.
Yeah.
Like we get it. Like maybe Nick was fucking completely psychotic. However, all this shit that proceeded for 17 years, we're not willing to forgive it because Nick done something about it and Nick decided to keep using and whatever that conversation is privately. And that's a huge topic that we talk about, Tony, all the time in terms of the addiction and the mental illness side of it. And, you know, but like at the end of the day, you know, when you're sitting there as again, the victims, the surviving victims of this horrific fucking thing that happened, you know, I mean, you're going through all of it and you're trying to figure out what is the right thing to do here. What's not? Are we willing to do this? And, you know, what would Dad want us to do? And the ironic thing is that Dad probably would have wanted them to fucking pay the fucking, because that's who Rob Reiner was. Well,
Bob, think about this, Bob and Tony, the surviving members for their entire lives have been in Nick's shadow because of his addiction, his mental illness, all of it. This might be the first time where they stepped back and went, no, Mom and Dad coddled him because they didn't know what else to do. Yeah. This time we're going to let him go on his own. Like for what you said, fuck this. Yeah. I'm reclaiming my life. Maybe this was the first step in healing for them.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a long time coming. Where it's like, finally, we're going to get our say.
Yep.
Like I can imagine, again, pure speculation, but I can imagine those conversations between the other siblings and mom and dad. And I'm guessing there was a lot of guys, this tough, this easy coddling, you know, love thing is not working. Like, right. Tough love is not necessarily the best option either. We don't want them to go die on the streets, but you're killing yourselves by allowing this to go the way it goes. Originally, probably a metaphorically way that it was being said, and now obviously it turned into literal. TMZ reporting that Nick is currently not competent to stand trial. Luckily, no one's asking him to stand trial right now. His meds are not allegedly stabilized as of right now. He's apparently still delusional. Understanding allegedly that he killed his parents, allegedly admitting he knows he did kill his parents, but he thinks it's a conspiracy. That's the narrative that we're hearing right now. And I'm not saying that it might not be true, but it's kind of a boy who cried wolf thing as well. Yeah. How many times can you manipulate and bullshit people to your own advantage because of your addiction, because of your mental illness, and that's the driver. And now maybe you really are that far gone. Maybe your brain is so fried that everything is firing and telling you this is a conspiracy. But at the end of the day, we obviously know it's not. It's hard to know if one is just saying this aloud to continue to go down the path of, see, he's crazy, versus, see, he's going to pretend he's crazy because it's the only card he has left.
Could be.
So let me ask you this. Like, so how did this, like, what is the source of this leaking out that Nick thinks it's a conspiracy, and who are the conspirators?
Well, I mean, it's his delusions. TMZ is the one that's reporting it. Well, exactly. I mean, Nick hasn't, as far as we understand, like, hasn't really described who the conspirators are, other than he feels that he's, you know, basically being persecuted here, which, when you're in that perspective and in that sort of delusion, and you have the addiction aspect and you have the mental illness aspect of it. Yeah, it's a disease that does cause a lot of paranoia and delusion. So I'm not shocked by this.
This is a conspiracy in his mind.
And if there is a conspiracy, and I just did a piece on this yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think it's dropping today. There is a conspiracy. There was a conspiracy his whole life to protect him from himself.
Yeah.
And now that conspiracy has finally turned and he's being held accountable, and everyone is looking at him and going, see? So in a way, if you're this mentally ill and off, it may certainly feel like a conspiracy, because suddenly all the coddling, all the handholding, all of the bumpers, all of the padded rooms that have been saving your ass your entire life are gone because you killed the only people who were keeping you there, and he's facing it. I could see it kind of feeling like a conspiracy.
Yeah. No. And like you said, especially if the schizophrenia thing is the actual diagnosis, and it's of the variety of paranoid schizophrenia.
Yeah.
He 100% thinks it's a fucking conspiracy, because that's what that disease does. That disease is, everybody's out to get me. Like, they are trying to kill me. Who they is unknown. Except to that person in their mind, it's typically some seedy government agents in their mind, you know, chasing. So, but there's two aspects of it, right? So, and I want to touch upon it, you know, the competency and the insanity defense are two completely different legal concepts, which I talk about it on our channel all the time, because I think people have a tendency to kind of think that they're one and the same, and they are not. Mm-hmm. Competency is an issue as to the now, okay? Whereas, meaning they're evaluating whether or not the defendant now, what their state of mind is now. Do they understand the process? Do they understand what the consequences of the process are, and can they assist in their own defense? Those are big questions that are asked when trying to determine somebody's competency. Now, are they intertwined? Is his lack of competency and his ability or inability to be able to understand the proceedings intertwined with his mental illness? Yes, of course, but they're different things, because again, and when we get into the McNaughton rule, which is the insanity defense, which is what they employ in California, which is not a ton of states still use McNaughton. Like, McNaughton was back when my dad tried the Gacy case, Illinois used McNaughton. They don't use it anymore. And we'll get into it. But the insanity defense is dealing with the then. So yeah. What was the state of mind at the time that the crime took place, as opposed to competency being the now?
And,
so
that, and
the, you understand yeah. that? Right.
So one of the big things with this too is they don't have to prove that Nick didn't know it was wrong. He can be aware that it was wrong. They have to prove he didn't understand the nature and the quality
Correct.
Of his actions. That's the bar here. It's not just killing them is wrong. You know that, right? Yes, he does. But if in his mind he's thinking, well, they're fucking aliens and they're from another planet and I have to save the world by killing them, or whatever his brain is telling him, if they can argue that and that can be effective to a jury and can make enough sense, then that's not guilty by reason of insanity. And that's what he has to prove. Canada still runs with the McNaughton rule. There was another case, Carmichael, that I talk about in another piece this week. TMZ touched on it as well in their doc, of a case where a father killed his son. He's free now. He's going around the country in Canada talking about the dangers of medication and how that can affect. Very different scenario there, too. He didn't have a lifetime of manipulating people and drug-addled choices that destroyed lives. This was a medication transition, and then it had that effect and horrible things happened. A little different context here, but that was successfully argued, you know, the nature and quality. And in this case, too, you know, the past bad acts of Nick Reiner might not make it into any sort of trial here, and we may just solely look at him at that moment in time. And if we are solely looking at him at that moment in time, talking purely from a legal perspective, not all the emotion that goes into it, the nature and quality, he may not have understood that actually when it was happening, which would then truly make him not guilty by reason of insanity under California law. Alan Jackson may be completely right, technically. It's the emotional aspect that a lot of us don't want to accept.
Right. And California also, aside from McNaughton, which is what you just described in terms of understanding the nature and the quality of their actions, that they also recognize, excuse me, the irresistible impulse test, which is, again, the defendant can assert insanity if they can prove, and it's their burden, that they were unable to control their actions due to a mental defect or disease. Mm-hmm. Illinois kind of employed that, and that was when my father was defending Gacy under the insanity defense. That was the one that they tried to hang their hat on. Mm-hmm. And you know, you do that through psychologists and psychiatrists who come in and do their work and, you know, are ultimately going to be the ones trying to sell it to a jury. So, you know, that 404B stuff, that prior bad acts that you speak of, is going to be a really interesting part of this case, because it is a burden shift. Where typically when you're looking at most criminal cases, it's the prosecution is the one that has the entire burden. The defense doesn't have to put shit on. If you're coming forward with an insanity defense, that becomes a burden shifter, and you as the defense have to initially show that there is insanity here. And then the state has to show beyond a reasonable doubt that that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. So, so there's an initial burden, and then it shifts back to the state, to where the state's then burden becomes everything that guy just said is bullshit. So that type of thing, you know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, and you and I, like, we have a little bit of a separation on Nick Reiner. I know what you're feeling on him. Like, I know that you think that this was a fucking manipulative little shit bag who was spoiled and fucking entitled and was a little fucking addict running around. I don't know enough about that guy to know if the mental illness preceded the addiction or vice versa.
I think both can coexist.
They both can coexist. Yeah. But what matters to me is what was first. It's a chicken or the egg type thing, because if he had mental illness prior to him starting to use, it changes the scenario for me, because then that becomes a situation wherein he's trying to self-medicate.
Right. And here's the thing. A lot of people don't know that they are mentally ill because they're hearing these voices and then they go use drugs to quiet the voices. So how do we know
the chicken or the egg?
Exactly.
Well, I mean, if you can ever have that real conversation with them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like that. That's the million-dollar question. Is he going to be cognizant or truthful enough to give the real background on it, on like when this shit? Because we don't like look at this point. None of us know what his medical history is. I mean, HIPAA exists for a reason. Yeah. That presumably will come out at trial. Like there are going to be HIPAA releases that are signed because his medical history is going to have to be made a part of this case in order to prevail on this insanity defense. We're going to find out. We'll know. We'll know if Tony's right. If Tony's right, if he was just an entitled little fuck bag who started just shooting up heroin when he was 15 and just fucked off and then, you know, forever was manipulating everybody around him. I'm the little addict. And they're bringing him in and they're fucking putting him in, you know, $100,000 a day fucking, you know, rehab facilities. Mm-hmm. And he just kept fucking off and fucking off. Or was he riddled with mental? Because if he's riddled with mental illness for whatever reason, I'm going to give him a hell of a lot more grace than I am if it was the addiction and then it was later onset of mental illness. Mm-hmm. You know, because the addiction, once you become addicted, it does become the battle. But you still, when you have those types of resources wherein your parents can give you the best of the best in terms of help, and you're still electing and you've gone through it and you know that it's going to be a lifelong battle, that once you're on it, you're on it. It's a forever fight. And if you elect to keep allowing yourself to use and with because you know,
and that's the crux of it right there.
Resources, man.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the crux of it. I believe all of that's true. And at the end of the day, not guilty by reason of insanity may be correct. At the end of the day, should he be in a prison? No, I honestly think probably not guilty by reason of insanity, but that doesn't mean you're walking free either. No, and people don't understand that. They think, oh, not guilty. No, it means you're going to a mental institution probably for the rest of your life,
correct,
which is probably where he belongs, because he has demonstrated through his track record of behavior that every kind of inpatient, outpatient, private facility that he's gone in and out of his entire life hasn't worked. So yeah, it's time to lock you up and keep you away from everybody else. Death penalty, I don't agree. I don't think that is appropriate in this case.
I do think
that there's probably a mix of everything in that realm, but I do think there was enough open windows in his mind over the last 32 years of his life of being sober. And yes, mental illness was certainly there, but there was enough where he had the autonomy and the ability to say, if I keep using, this really fucks with me, even, and I have these other issues going on, I need to stop. I need to really work at doing this. Every opportunity that he had publicly that he talked about, it was never that sort of an attitude. It was like, yeah, did this, did that. He was high in half of the interviews he later admitted to. So this is someone who was not actively participating in his recovery by choice. Now, the end of the day, was it ever running through his mind that at some point he's going to get so fucked up in his mind, he's going to go murder his parents? No, probably never crossed his mind. But then he got to that state with everything that was going on, that's where it ended up. So I agree, at the end of the day, probably not guilty by reason of insanity, but he needs to be locked away forever.
And he will be. And he will be. I mean, ultimately, look, they're going to look at it. But I do want people to understand that with the not guilty by reason of insanity, he will be housed in a mental health facility wherein, you know, he will receive treatment. And there does exist the possibility that if he is found to have been cured. See, but the problem for Rick is is always going to be that he's gonna have to stay on the meds, and they're never gonna trust him again. Yeah. That he just won't do what people with mental illness do, which is when their meds are working, either by way of the fact that they don't like the way that they makes it that makes them feel, or a combination of that and them thinking they are now healed. Like, I'm all better. I don't feel that way anymore. Well, yeah, it's the meds. But in their mind, they're thinking, I'm better. I don't need these.
Which is why they can't be the ones monitoring this and admitting, but we give them that autonomy. That's how our system is broken, because we go to them and say, oh, well, you go ahead and you make your own calls. No. Right. No. There's so much to this case, and we'll continue to get into it.
Before we dip, so E89 had asked, why would anyone want to prove this guy innocent? He's a killer, just like the Amityville Horror. That is exactly the challenge of an insanity defense jury member.
Yeah.
Because some people in this world, and it's, I'm not casting any kind of aspersions on Rika, but that's how some people think about shit.
Correct.
Like, I don't give a fuck if he's crazy. He killed somebody, burn him.
You know, unfortunately, the world isn't as black and white as we'd like it to be. Everything is in the gray area somewhere, and this is certainly in the middle of that gray area. And to do it justice, to think about it from a mature adult standpoint, you got to identify that. And it is in the gray, and that's where it is.
And every case is different. You can't just throw a blanket over it and say, well, they killed somebody, they need to go away.
Amityville would be an interesting psychological way to look at it psychologically today, very differently than they did in the 1970s when that happened. Yes. I think you'd have a very, very different case today than you did back then. He's dead now, the man who killed his family in that house. And then obviously you have the Lutzes who came in afterwards for the horror end of it. Fascinating story over there.
Yep.
Let's move on to another story, a trial that is getting underway. We're going to be bringing it to you all throughout the week. The Brendan Banfield, the Au Pair Affair murder trial. The prosecution says Brendan Banfield orchestrated an elaborate double murder, creating fake profiles, luring a stranger to his home, coordinating this with his au pair mistress, and staging the whole thing as self-defense. It would be pretty elaborate if this is in fact what happened. But their own digital forensic expert, the one from the prosecution, says the catfishing theory doesn't hold up. The lead detective who questioned the theory then reassigned. The original prosecutor removed. And their entire case now rests on a woman who changed her story after a year in jail to get a ticket home to Brazil. If you're the defense in this case, where do you start, Bob? Bob Mata is with us, host of Defense Diaries, available wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. This case is not as cut and dry as it may look on paper, and we all know that now. But where do you start on this if you're defending Brendan Banfield in court, and half of these experts have said, yeah, you know what? Everything we've come to the conclusion of wasn't on Brendan's devices. It was her devices and multiple of her devices at different times with different people on this FetLife website, not Brendan. That's an interesting piece to this story.
It is. I'm loving it if I'm retained on that case.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa, all right, we got it. But like, I mean, you start, like you said, you start with her deal. If you're the defense, you're like, okay, essentially their entire case is now revolving around the particular testimony that she's going to supply at trial. And she got a sweetheart deal. So you're starting there, and then you're moving into this other aspect, which is the lead investigator was reassigned because he didn't agree with the catfishing theory that the state was putting forward. Those two things are about as tasty as you can get in terms of really punching a lot of holes into the state's theory.
You're looking for a reasonable doubt here. I mean, you have multiple investigators being reassigned, kicked off units, being told you're never going to do this sort of work again in terms of identifying information on these devices. There's two sides to the story. We'll find out hopefully more in court here as to exactly why these people were reassigned. One could look at it and go, maybe they really did a horrible job at examining this device. Maybe it wasn't up to snuff. Maybe it was completely, this does happen. People do bad work, and then their higher ups have to go and say, what did you do? This is not at all how you do this job. And that may be it. Or it may be, this narrative doesn't go along with our story, and we're really mad and we're petty, and we're going to say, you're never going to do this job again, not thinking, gee, this may look really shitty when this goes to trial, having that on the record.
Right. And at the end of the day, It took them a long time to effectuate an arrest on this case.
It did.
Yeah, it did.
Her, she was like, what, like 6-9 months? He was like 17 months before they arrested him.
Exactly. That's a year and a half.
Only after she changed her story and said, I'll testify against him and go and basically confirm your theory of the case. It's not at all what I said happened, but I'm going to go and say this. And I guess I only get my return ticket home after the trial. And I go along and say exactly what you're telling me to say.
Something exactly. Doesn't smell right.
Right. It's got that issue with the smell test. And, you know, is it? And look, I mean, look, there exist cases in the world. I mean, look at the Adelsons.
Yeah.
You know, they were very deliberate in terms of going after the Adelsons themselves. They had to build the case. They knocked down the dominoes. This isn't that, though. But they're like, it's one of those cases where essentially the state is just trying to sell a story, because the fact of the matter is we're never going to know what really happened in that house.
True. Why do they need to sell a story, though? Why?
Is that how the state operates, Stacey?
Oh, I don't want to believe that, Bob.
In a circumstantial case, all both sides are trying to do, and remember, only one has the burden, is to sell a story.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't there. They don't know. They are not able to prove who was accessing her devices, whether it was Brendan doing this catfishing thing. Like, I mean, the guy was he was an IRS agent, right? So he's not a fucking idiot.
Like, if he put and a criminal investigative IRS agent too. Right? He has a weapon. He's not a paper guy going through the trails. Right. He's the one that's out enforcing thing. So this is someone who's a little bit, he's not, when you think IRS agent at the desk, he ain't that guy.
Right. And he admits that he was in a heavy duty affair with the au pair. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Like, I mean, they've owned that part of it. Like, and that's your challenge when you're the defense on this thing. You're like, okay, there's no point in us trying to pretend like the affair didn't mm-hmm. take place. We're not going to try to walk away from the fact that they've got, you know, pictures of themselves shortly after the wife's been killed, you know, in the bedroom on her former bedstand, you know, the new happy couple. That shit is, it gives you like a certain feeling of like ick in terms mm-hmm. of when you're looking at this defendant, but does it make him a murderer? No, of course it doesn't.
No, you know, I mean, Yeah.
It's going. I will not be surprised. And granted, opening statements in the first witness has just started today, mm-hmm. So we're really early on in it. But I am not going to be surprised that this thing comes back either hung or not guilty, because it is a tough case for the state for a lot of different reasons.
Now, the state, I mean, they could be right in I mean, it could be right or wrong in their thinking of where they kicked some of these investigators off the case with the Fetlite stuff and all of that. There could be parallel truths here. Like, he could have killed his wife on purpose and they could have done this over here, and both can be true at the same time. But at the end of the day, we got to take a look here and go, well, what actually happened then? If it wasn't, in fact, Brendan Banfield and the au pair plotting to get rid of his wife by hiring someone from a fetish website to go in and basically assault his wife. The guy apparently is thinking it's some sort of kink role play. Mm-hmm. She's being assaulted and then murdered. So we would have to believe here, if they're innocent, if Brendan Banfield is innocent, if the au pair is innocent, that this guy with no past criminal record showed up for the assault and also wanted to kill her and was killing her, and then they go and kill him in the process. I know there's issue with that. There's blood spatter issue. The way that they mm-hmm. found him, some are saying, and we'll learn more about it in the trial, that it was almost execution style with him, that he was on the ground, possibly on his knees in a different area of the room when he was killed. Again, another situation where I think you could have two parallels that are true, where he could have been in there stabbing and attacking the wife. They show up, get the fuck off my wife, get get on your knees over here, and then somebody shoots him. You know, maybe not in immediate defense, but in rage of like, what the fuck? Boom. I can see that being true. The idea that this guy is an angel and he has no past criminal record, his mom is the one that's standing up for him going, he's such a nice little boy. You know, he still
just
lives
likes
at home.
To role play.
He's 30 something and he's showing up to fake rape someone. You know, like that's a little weird. I don't think that that makes him the most innocent. I don't think it takes possible homicidal maniac out of the question. If this is part of your standard operating procedure on any given Tuesday. There's a lot of chaos at the end of the day, and that's what's going to make this thing so difficult for a jury to understand. But do you think the jury can buy it that way, that they showed up, two people got two different weapons, again, kind of weird, yeah. And killed this guy who was attacking this wife? I don't know. I mean, either way you swing it, Any pill is a hard one to swallow.
It is. And you know, ultimately, I think this case, in terms of whether or not they're going to be able to sell it to the jury, and I'm talking about the state, is going to rest on the devil's in the details in terms of how the shit went down the day that it went down. So, because the kid's home. Right. Or the kids are home. How many kids?
One kid waiting to go to the zoo. She's standing in the basement down by the garage with her backpack and jacket on because mom had planned to take her to the zoo that day and she was ready and rearing to go. Okay, meanwhile, so upstairs, this shit show's happening.
That little factoid would seem to fly in the face of the concept that she hooked up some guy to come fucking choke her out and fuck her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like that's a problem for the defense. Like that, that's what I'm saying. The devil's in the detail. You know, the fact that he just happens to be out at McDonald's stroking his meat in the fucking bathroom or whatever he's doing at the time that this guy shot. There's
Arch
a lot
deluxing
of,
it.
Yeah.
Oh, probably, you guys.
Oh, sorry about that. So there's parts of the story that I think that the defense is going to have a hard time getting the jury not to be like, well, that's kind of fucked up. Like are we going to believe? Because they're going to have to sully the victim. They're going to have to make her into shit mom, right? Yeah. And that kind of victim blaming rubs a lot of people the wrong way. Oh, she was a terrible mother. That's why she would. She was trying to get a quick fuck in, you know, a little BDSM before she's going to the zoo with her kid. I mean, people
like to pretend that people like this don't exist in society. I think people would be shocked.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I think is a big piece of this whole trial is the fact that people are wrestling with other people and other people's proclivities to whatever they're into. Now, because you don't do it and most of the people around you that you're aware of aren't doing this sort of thing, doesn't mean others are not, and to an uncomfortable level. But there's so many things that people are uncomfortable talking about or uncomfortable being aware of. And when they find out, they just stick their head in the sand. They're like, wait a second. I mean, it's like abortion, you know, that's sort of an issue. People don't want to talk about that. People don't want to deal with it. And then you start growing up a little bit. And by the time you get into your 40s, you go and look at every female that you know of any close relationship that you've had and try identifying one that hasn't had some sort of a sexual attack experience at some point in their life from a male or has faced the very real possibility or has faced having an abortion because of something like that.
Correct.
People don't like to talk about those fucking numbers either because they're uncomfortable and icky. I feel like this is kind of that same sort of thing. Look, this is part of reality. You certainly don't have to participate in it. You don't have to like it. You don't have to condone it. But she can be a wonderful mother while also being a frequent member of a website like that. Again,
you don't want to yuck her yum. I mean, she can do whatever she wants. Yeah,
it's not everybody's cup of tea, but it also doesn't make someone a horrible human being either, being deserved of being murdered. Again, this is where we're dealing with human beings at the end of the day on a jury and emotions and all of that that's going to play into it, not just the sheer, you know, deduction of facts and the information and, oh, well, according to this, if we follow this line, this leads here. All of this gets balled up into this huge bowl of chaos that is this case.
And I'll be really honest with you, I didn't know what FetLife was. The first time I read about this,
Sure, you didn't.
I don't.
Notice the only person in the group who's going out of their way to say they didn't know anything about FetLife. Like,
For the record, I've never heard of it.
Never! I've never heard of it either, but I wasn't going to bring it up because I didn't think it was a point worth making.
There are people in our chat section who didn't know about it either. I'm telling you that. I had to look up. I'm going to guess most of us didn't know what it was.
I'd never heard of it either. Yeah. We believe you, Stace.
Oh, thanks. Continue on. Gosh.
Here's the deal. We all, like you said, T, we are all human beings and we are all fucking warped. There is no person on the planet except for somebody who's a liar that doesn't have a fucking warped thought or two that rolls around in their mind. We all do it. Mm-hmm. Some people are sex addicts. Some people just cannot stop thinking about sex and fucking, and that's the only it's an obsessive thing. I have no idea what the victim in this case got into on a day. And no one else does either, including her fucking husband. Because that is a part of life wherein do we ever share all of ourselves within even our closest person in our life, we still always hold a little something back because to be able to feel that kind of comfort with someone where you could go to your deepest, darkest fucking places just really doesn't exist that frequently in the world. So the point being that, do you really ever know somebody, you know? And it's like,
you know who knows us better than anybody? Our digital footprint, our search history, Google.
That's right.
That's who knows us, because that's the shit that comes out of our minds.
Robots.
That's the shit that goes in there. Yeah. And according in this case, so do some digital forensic experts who dived into her devices. They apparently knew too. It just didn't fit the narrative because according to them, she was doing this stuff.
Yeah.
It just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit nicely into the box here that the cheating husband killed her to go live a happy life forever with the au pair.
It's a sexy story. If you're in the state, it checks all the boxes.
Yeah.
You got the fucking philandering husband, the au pair from fucking Brazil or wherever the fuck she's from. Yeah. You know, and he's in the midst of it and he's admitting it. All the pieces fit in the state's mind. It's a lot like,
except for the pieces that don't, the ones that they said, we don't need. I know it's a 100-piece puzzle, but we're good with 95.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you don't have the full puzzle then, though. But 95 is good enough, right? No, I need to see the full puzzle. Yeah. Juliana Perez Magalhães is the prosecution's entire case. Without her, they have a digital forensic expert who contradicts their theory, a timeline that took 19 months to produce charges in a trial of reassigned investigators. With her, they have someone who says Brendan Banfield planned double murder and handed her a gun. But here's what the jury needs to know. Juliana spent a year in jail facing murder charges, telling police the same story Brendan did. Then she got a deal, pled to manslaughter, got time served, go home to Brazil. Her sentencing is scheduled after Banfield's trial to make sure she keeps cooperating. And from jail, she wrote her mother that she was heartbroken for what she was doing to Brendan and that she still loved him. I find that to be a very interesting piece of this case. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, is with us to break this down. How big of a piece of the puzzle do you think that is going to be in the minds of a jury, showing that sort of a mindset that she's heartbroken, that she hates that she's doing this? And I'm paraphrasing her words here, but this is what she basically said to her mom, that she hates that she's doing this, but she wants to get back home. She wants to get back to mom. That's what she said in some of those letters. I'm guessing the prosecution may not have seen those coming. Yeah. How impactful do you think that's going to be in terms of lining up her credibility with reality?
I think they're very powerful. you know, because I mean, at that point in time, she's writing him under the concept that no one's going to be privy to him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of defeats the argument that they were self-serving. Like, and when you hear her 911 call and her inability to make words
in
a pressure situation, it lends to the fact that she is not a criminal mastermind. Like, I don't think there's any part of her that's piecing together the ability to be like, okay, I'm going to write these letters to my mother, which are going to really lay out for Brendan the concept that I've made this story up in order to be able to get home to my family.
Mm-hmm. Like a Corey Richens situation.
Exactly. And I just don't think that there's going to be a situation where the state's going to be able to sully her up on that, because I think the words are what they are. And I don't think they're going to be able to frame it in a way that she was thinking way ahead in terms of this thing ultimately going to trial and these things were going to become a part of evidence. And this was kind of building in this story that, look, they pressured me into making this story up about Brendan, and I had to do it because I want to come home and mm-hmm. I want to be with my mother. I just don't like, I think it's a problem for the state. There's a lot of problems for the state in this case.
And it's not like the option was, oh, I'm not going to do this and I'm going to live a free and wonderful life here in the U.S. And it was either you go along with our story or we're going to put you in prison for the rest of your life as participating in this murder. So, I mean, that's a big aspect to this case. The prosecution is positioning Juliana as a reluctant participant who was told it's too late to back out. At the end of the day, the jury is going to be looking for abnormality here. And the way that she delivers on the stand is going to be key. They're going to look for anything that looks off or odd. The problem with that way of thinking, though, is how do you not look off or odd if you're in the situation and having the conundrum that this woman is facing? It's either go down this road and hope to God that the prosecution fails and that the jury believes your story and believes Brendan's story, that this was self-defense, that you were fighting off this horrible man who came in and was violating his wife while you're having an affair with him, you know, or do you look at it the other way and that this is all part of a scheme and that it's all bullshit? Or is it the third option where this was truly self-defense, but it's likely not going to be believed that way? It looks too much, too damning the other way. And she's solely acting in her own self-interest, which is what human beings do. And that's to have as little to do with this as possible. And the only route of doing that is by damning the other person and going to another country and basically starting over and pretending none of this happened. She has that opportunity. She has the window that no one else does here to basically have a fresh start in another country. And distance and time and geography can all help make that a reality. And meanwhile, Brendan back here could spend the rest of his life in prison if, in fact, he's found guilty on these charges. There's a clear incentive here for her to go down the road she's going, even if it doesn't align with facts and reality.
100%. Yeah. You know, but the interesting thing is with her deal, if, and I'm assuming that she's got counsel. All right. So, mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that counsel has had this conversation with her wherein you're saying, look, their entire case rests upon you. Like, truly. Mm-hmm. I mean, do they have some circumstantial evidence that they're going to be able to put forth? Yes. But you are the linchpin to the case. Now, talking about that moment in time, T, where she is sitting on the stand and she's got this crossroads, because there's either one of two things is true. Either what she's going to be testifying, what the state wants her to testify, is true, and that this was all a nefarious plan that was cooked up by Brendan and her, but mostly Brendan. And you know, he you know, enabled her to do the things that she had to do to be a part of that plan in order to make this thing happen. Or the other part's true, what the defense mm-hmm. is saying, that she was involved with this stuff, that this guy really was an unhinged weirdo that she fired. So one of those two things is true. Now, mm-hmm. like you said, she's got this massive incentive to get back home. Like it's a sweetheart deal.
Yes, just it is.
The other part of this is if I'm her attorney and I'm just advising her at this point, and I don't know if this deal is written in stone. A lot of times they make deals and the prosecutors don't want to write anything down. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes these things are not written out and signed. It's a trust me, bro proposition with the state. The other thing about this that's really, really interesting is if she decided to switch course, I don't know that they could try her. I don't know that really? They have a case for what? If they can't convict Brendan because she no longer is playing ball mm-hmm. and testifying the way they need her to testify, how in the world are they going to convict her?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they try just to torture her. That's her risk. Am I willing to potentially put myself in peril that they will try to arrest me and try to convict me on this? Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. Because I think let me ask you guys this. If she flips the script on the stand, like out of the blue, shocks the state, they're like, what? And she's like, no. I'm sorry, but we did not plot this. Brenda didn't. Like, I mean, what happens if she really loved that guy and that guy didn't do anything other than like, and she's battling these demons right now as her day approaches mm-hmm. to get on the stand. And she's like, am I that person where I care so much about myself that I'm willing to lie on this dude in order to get this sweetheart deal, knowing that it's going to put him away for the rest of his life? That's a big decision that would weigh heavily on anybody, unless you're a sociopath.
It makes you wonder. I mean, I guess if we're just kind of looking at the possibilities of what's going to happen here, I think what's not going to be said is going to be more powerful than what is said when it comes to her testifying, meaning we're going to end up, you know, we'll see the transcript, we'll watch it, you know, and if you're just reading the words, she may testify for the state very well. She may say everything they want her to say, but it's how she says it that's going to matter. And it's how she says what she says on cross-examine that's going to matter. Not necessarily just the words. She may say again exactly what the DA wants and exactly what the prosecution wants, but if it's stated in a way that's not believable or comes across as fabricated or there's something else here or something she's not saying out loud, that is what is going to be key. And I think that the candor is what this whole case is going to be resting on for the prosecution, is her candor on the stand, not even just her words, but how she delivers.
She is going to be a terrible witness.
I can already feel it.
She is not going to be Katie Magbanawa.
Yeah. Like
Katie Magbanawa gave what's his face business. And she she ain't that. She is going to be, again, I am going to restate this. There exists a possibility where she just flips on the state on the stand. It mm-hmm. exists in this world. Or like you said,
accidentally.
I straight up on purpose.
Yeah. Like I could see that. I could see both. I could see her also just slipping a little bit too in an answer. And they're like, and somebody just honing in. I'm like, what?
What did you just say? She just thinks better of it, T. What happens if, like I said, maybe. What happens if, because look, is the hours count down to when you're getting on the stand and you're just sitting here? You have to think about if you're in that position, and let's pretend for a moment that the story that Brendan is putting forth is true.
Okay.
And they have pigeonholed her and bullied her into a deal in order to save her own skin. And they've got her to turn state's evidence, and it's on a lie. Like, let's pretend that that exists in the world. If you're her, that's why I'm saying, if she's got a lawyer and I'm going to her and I'm saying, look, like, you can tell me what's up or what's not, but I'm just going to tell you, if this thing really went down the way that Brendan said she did, and this just so happened to be that she had hooked up with a guy who was trying to kill her, and Brendan happened in and he shot and killed her and saved her life, or tried to save her life, and it was too late, and you're sitting here and you're going to sell him down the river, I'm just telling you, if you don't testify that way, there exists a possibility that they might arrest you and try to convict you, but they won't get it. Because if they can't get him, they can't get her. Like, it couldn't be on a perjury, because she's going in there and telling her truth. That's not perjury. It could only be for the homicide or conspiracy to commit murder. And if they can't convict him, how are they convicting her?
I agree, but she's still rolling the dice. She's still rolling the dice on, they can't convict me, can they? Well, let's find out.
It's definitely a dice roll.
But do you want to find out? If you're an au pair, you're a 22-year-old woman, you've lived your whole life in Brazil, you came over for this, you already got a life going on, you're going to do this for a little bit of time and then, you know, continue on into you're at the very beginning stages of your adult life.
But she's also having an affair with a married man.
Yeah, well, yes. And then a lot of people begin their adult life. A lot of people begin their adult life doing stupid shit like that. But the thing is, this is the life that you're beginning to get into. And then this level of chaos starts surrounding you. It turns out the home you get into, you're dealt this bunch of shit that you didn't ever ask for. Great. I mean, as you're having an affair, you didn't ask for this shit. Most people have affairs and you never go to this level of insanity.
But what happens if it's true?
Exactly. What if it's true, but that he didn't do it? That this is the story, that she's being railroaded into testifying against him. She's 20 something. She has all of her life ahead of her. She's from a different country. You're 100%. Your 100% card of resetting your own life is simply going on the stand and agreeing with the state and then getting the fuck out of Dodge. And you are free then.
Oh, man.
Or roll the dice. And I'm going to take the moral stand here. And maybe this will work out and I'll be free and he'll be free. And this will all be great. Or maybe we'll go to prison for the rest of our lives.
You
have the clear out. She's going to take the clear out, I feel. I don't know how effective. She'll be on the stand at it, but I'm going to guess she's going to go with the clear out, considering her moral bankruptcy to begin with, of fucking the guy whose family you're taking care of, and you know the wife. I don't think moral certitude is super high on her level of importance in her life. So I think, you know.
Or maybe she's just young.
Yeah, young and dumb, too. Exactly. She's young and dumb.
Both can be true.
Right, she doesn't have.
You're right. It all can be true. I'm just thinking the path of least resistance, which most human beings are going to take, and she is a clear one to literally reset life. She's taking it right now.
I agree.
So the idea that she's going to change this opportunity on the stand and stand up for what may be morally right if he didn't do it, I don't know that she would do it.
Well,
again,
let me ask
my
you this
speculation.
Question before we wrap. All right, yeah. I want to ask you this question: without her testimony, does he get convicted?
Without her testimony, no.
If she flips the script, does she get?
If she flips it, no. Because I think he has too many issues with the if the jury's paying attention with the investigators that got fired and that those big pieces of evidence which the prosecution surely wanted to hang their hats on, all that's in question. So how much are you going to weigh that in this case and present that to a jury as being super solid when your own investigator said, yeah, we don't think he did that?
Because I promise you, she has counsel, whether it was appointed or whether she hired somebody. And she's talking. She is asking questions of this lawyer. And she's saying, okay, like, I want to know, because we don't know her from a hole in the ground either.
No.
We know that she is young. We know that she's got a home back out of this country and she's got family there. And it's easy to assume that everything that she was just, you know, like, she's got zero moral compass. She's fucking this guy's, you know, husband that this married woman that she's not pairing for with a kid. She's trying to insert herself and take the place of the wife. Like, ultimately, whether it's by hook or crook, like, maybe not with the understanding that they're going to kill the wife, but that, you know, she is going to supplant that wife in terms of being this guy's lover and then future spouse. So if that was enough for her in order to kind of, if that's her motivation initially, and she talks to her lawyer and she's like, if I tell the truth, okay, if I don't say what the state wants me to say, and in your opinion, and the lawyer will say, well, you know, I can't predict, but will it be a harder sell for the state to convict him if you change your story? Yes, and there is a likelihood that he could be acquitted. And she's like, all right, well, and okay, so he's out. He's done. They can never charge him again. And are they going to come after me? And then he's going to say, well, I mean, let's look at it. Who are they going to put as a witness against you? There's certain, Brendan's certainly gone. They've got nothing on him anymore. Mm-hmm. They've tried him. Double jeopardy is attached. He is done, yeah. Done. They have no witness against you. I don't know how they're building a case. There exists a world in which mm-hmm. her counsel could have guided her. It's interesting is all I'm saying. I think
without a doubt. It is.
It's going to play the way that it's supposed to play out. Yeah. She's going to testify. Yeah. But I wanted to build some suspense to this trial, yeah. that it exists in this world where yeah. she can flip the script.
It does. It certainly exists. It's a roll of the dice, though, too,
totally.
On her part. And yeah. and does she, because she's got a clear out right here. Is it worth taking that step back and going, I might not have that clear path out if I do this? And it may not all work out, even if she is telling the truth, because the truth doesn't always prevail. It's what jury wants to think. So there's a lot of questions here. We're going to keep covering it. I know you are over on your channel, Defense Diaries, Bob Mata. Be sure to go check that out. Press subscribe wherever you get podcasts on Defense Diaries or on YouTube. And be sure to join in our conversation here on our YouTube channel, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, or on our Substack. The link is in the description, hiddenkillers.substack.com. Let us know what you think on this case. We're going to be following it through its conclusion here over the next handful of weeks. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening as well. Until next time, for Bob, for Todd, for Stacy, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to FinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.